We Like Dota is brought to you by our wonderful patrons TL Cohn, Nine Eggs, Justin, Lonnie, Rusty, Dr. Carmack, Mitchell Metzler, Klimpok, Demento, Elihu, Dandy Russ, Carl Underwood, Can Dashel, Flossen, and Titus Andromedon. To become a patron, go to www.welikedota.com and follow the links to the Patreon. We Like Dota episode 192 starts now. Hello, and welcome to We Like Dota. I'm Sam, the Plaid Pirate, and with me I have Arian, a.k.a. Retroend. Arian, hello.
Hello.
We have had a lot of Dota news happening recently.
Yes.
But I have to say, I have not been playing too much Dota.
Me neither.
But in happier news, we are going to be live in 2 weeks' time. At this very moment, 2 weeks from now, we will be live in Philadelphia. So I just wanted to say at the top of the show, please come support us in Philadelphia on June 24th. And it's going to be a great time. We will put up more details in the Reddit. So, Arian, let's get right down to business. How was your week in Dota, and how did it make you feel?
It made me feel pretty bad and then pretty good. I barely played any Dota. I was extremely busy for the past like 2 weeks or 10 days. I played 4 games in total. I had 3 calibration games, which were all terrible.
Oh no.
Many of you guys have experienced too. Now it's fixed, but the early calibration games had just terrible game quality overall. And I had 3 games. I played Axe, and I played Dark Willow, and I played Outworld Devourer. I lost 2-1-1. But even the game I won with Axe was just a terrible experience overall. Because like the teammates you get matched up with are actually the worst. So yeah, my X game was only win because someone from the enemy team disconnected. That's how desperate.
Oh god.
But I feel like the fourth game I played this week made up for it. It was a 1 hour 14 minutes Kunkka game.
Oh god.
I played with a buddy of mine called S Turtles, and it was just a great game overall. As I said, I played Kunkka. I ended up with 22 kills, but it didn't feel like a stomp at all. And because I wrecked the early game, but then we kind of had problems pushing high ground because we were against an Abaddon in Pudge and the Void, which makes high ground pushing pretty hard because the Void can just chrono you, the Pudge kind of messes with your positioning and pull people on the high ground. So we basically couldn't take wrecks, and it ended up in the Void becoming farmed after all because he had a bad start.
Yes.
Yeah. Kind of late game Void always gets farmed. And I had to buy a rapier with 3 data lie. I actually lost the rapier at their base.
No.
Void got it.
No.
I died without buyback. And we still won the game.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. Incredible. I don't, like, it wasn't even me. My friend, he was playing Nightstalker. He had an Axe, an Abyssal, and a Halberd, and he just killed the 6-slotted Void with the Divine solo.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What a player.
I don't know how he did it, but I got carried, basically.
Yeah, the only thing I have to say about the calibration games is, I think the advice from Twitter was just to stay away. Just wait it out until it seemed to be that the theory was that a lot of people are going to be playing after not playing for a long time because they want to get a badge or whatever, and so it was best just to kind of avoid it for a little while.
I really should have followed that advice in hindsight.
yeah, but you have a 66% win rate right now, so it's pretty good.
No. I lost two.
Lost two. I see.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not as good.
I'm sure I'll end up at like 50-50 win rate and then have the exact same MMR.
Yeah, probably.
I hope so, at least, because I got Legend Zero basically right before the new season.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to keep that for a longer time.
I believe in you.
Thanks, Sam.
My week in Dota was also not very active. I did not play too many games because I'm also a busy boy. So I think I'm slowly turning into Brian, where I don't actually play Dota, but still host a Dota 2 podcast. So, GG. I'm quite enjoying the resurgence of Turbo Mode.
Yeah, I like it too. So much fun.
Yeah, it's just fun, and the games are quick, and it feels like less of a chore sometimes. So
yeah, I think I read on Reddit somewhere a guy made a post about how calibration sucks because there's so much at stake that you can't actually enjoy the game, and that's why a lot of people lose, even though they're better than the game, like the median MMR of the games they're playing. And I think that's what Turbo is best at, just actually enjoying the games playing. Because if you play Dota to not play Dota, but to get a better MMR badge or something, then it won't be as fun.
Yeah, it's kind of a recipe for disaster, I think. I just wanted to say a quick shout out to my buddy Dota Prop. I played a turbo game with him the other day. He was Ursa, I was Zeus, and I felt like a very strong, powerful boy. Yes. And it was good. It was a nice little time to play Dota. My week in Dota was good. Had fun.
Nice. All right. Should we move on to news of the week?
Yes, so I'm sure everybody's expecting us to talk about the Super Major, because that is a very big deal. And I'm here to tell you that we will talk about the Super Major, but we are not going to do it in this episode. We want to devote an entire episode to that tournament and the outcomes of that tournament, because it was a big deal. And we don't really have the time right this moment to give it its proper due.
And also, neither of us watched like any Super Major, basically, because like the finals were today. We're recording this on Sunday, and I didn't even get to watch the finals. I was away and just checking my phone every hour, looking at the match score. Was like, yes, Liquid was winning.
Yeah, I was able to watch some, not of the finals though. So I didn't feel prepared to talk about it today.
Yeah.
But I'll do my best to catch up.
Was a 5-game series though, so I'm sure it was a great series.
Yes, it looked very, very exciting, so I'll try to catch up during the week. But now that the Super Major is over, all the DPC points are allotted. It's time to get hype. Start getting hype for TI.
Yes. When is it again?
Good question.
I don't actually know. I'm not going to PI.
Yeah, I'm not going to TI either. Usually, isn't it? It's in August, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, sometime in August. Yeah, August 15th.
Yeah, every year it's in August. And this year it's in Vancouver. So
nice.
Hopefully, some listeners will go and have a fun time. But we learned that Optic, they'll have to go through regionals to get there.
Yeah, but we're going to get into that later, because Valve announced the qualifier slots, and I'm pretty sure they're going to make it through the regional qualifiers, because there's actually a lot of slots for NA.
Yeah, do you want to fill us in on who's going to get what?
So yeah, Europe is going to get one slot, CIS is going to get one slot, China two slots, Southeast Asia two slots, North America three slots, and South America one slot.
Oh no.
Sam, what do you have to say about the fairness of this allocation?
Even as a very biased NA fanboy, this is a clear travesty. NA Dota does not deserve three slots. That is just, I don't know how you justify that.
Yeah, me neither. Because if you look at the 8 invites, there's no NA team in there. So I want to flame NA Dota, even though I'm going to do exactly that now. But I think NA Dota is not good enough to qualify, so Valve has to carry it through Opens. I said it.
Oh, man. I don't know what to say. I mean, it's pretty bad for NA to not have earned a single top 8 slot, right? So,
yep.
Don't really know how you get rewarded with three open qualifier spots in that regard. Where would you rather, like, if you had to move a slot or two, where would you put them?
Oh, that's a good question. I actually wouldn't move it to EU, because I think EU is very top heavy, so they have Liquid and Secret, who mm-hmm. are of course amazing, but they don't really have cool tier 2 teams, because pretty much for EU right now, Liquid and Secret are pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for CIS. Maybe Fly to Moon is like a good tier 2 team, but after that it's pretty much only VP, so I think I'd either give it to Southeast Asia
mm-hmm.
or to China, because I'm sure there's like 100 amazing tier 2 teams we haven't even heard about. And maybe one more to South America. I think it would be fair to give North America 2 slots.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I could be on board with that. I don't know. I mean, so we can kind of transition to the next thing, which is that Valve made a lot of changes for next year's DPC points.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to run down a little bit of what they changed around?
Sure. So they kind of stopped with majors and minors being two separate things. So now minors and majors will only be held in pairs. The yes. major qualifier will be held first, and the minor qualifier will be held second. But then the minor, the actual minor, will be played first, and the major will be played second. So it's like major qualifier, minor, major.
Yes.
And the logic behind it is that teams who qualified for the major, or I'm not sure if it counts directly invited teams, but I would say yes. So teams who didn't qualify for the major are only allowed to qualify to go to the minor qualifier. So if, for example, you're Secret or something, and you qualify for the major in the major qualifiers, you're actually not allowed to participate in the minor qualifiers. Also, if you win the minor, you will of course win money, but you won't win DPC points anymore, I assume. But you'll win a direct invite, basically, to the major. So, yeah.
So, yeah, one thing to clear up is that all teams that play in a minor or a major will earn DPC points.
Oh, sorry. I got that wrong.
Oh, no. It's okay. So I guess as long as you make the main event for either the minor or the major, you get DPC points. Which I think is cool, because I think that was one criticism of how they did it this year, was that the, you know, the awards were very top heavy. And mm-hmm. And that really made it tough for these teams. Like, kind of Optic maybe comes to mind, or I don't know, maybe some other examples of teams that were competing but not really getting to the top 3 or top 4, and then you're just not really rewarded then for being competitive.
Because when the system was announced, everybody kind of talked about how there's going to be so many tournaments, and the like tier 2, tier 3 Dota scene is going to grow so much because there's so much Dota being played and teams can't possibly go to every event. But it just ended up teams like Secret or even Liquid going to minors and just clean sweeping them without any contest, because some of because most of the big teams didn't even go to the minor. So if you go to a minor as a tier one team, you're basically winning it easy because there's no other tier one team going.
Yeah, and the other thing that this helps clear up too is there was definitely there was some criticism, I remember, in regards to scheduling. I know there was a lot of drama because different minors and different majors had, it was kind of unclear when the qualifiers were going to be for them. And so this publication from Valve really helps with that because it's very clear, like, okay, these are the dates that you'll play if you're in the major qualifier or if you're in the minor qualifier. And so it'll be, I think, a lot easier for teams to know, like, okay, this is when we have to clear our schedule and this is when we can do our boot camp and that kind of stuff.
Yep, and I also think it's going to be less Dota played overall because previously as well, it's like, I think it was double the amount of minors than the amount of majors, and now it literally only can be as much minors as majors, which means that if they're not upping the amount of majors, which I don't think they will, because there was already a lot of majors, this has to mean that there's less minors.
Yeah, it looks like there's five of each, and I don't know. One thing I like about
it's way less.
Yeah, it's way less, but also if you look at the schedule, like, there's gonna be a lot of Dota to watch because it's like, okay, for example, like, the first major and minor pair, like, it starts, the qualifiers start September 17th, they run until the 26th. I mean, there's a couple of days break in there, but, like, that's a solid, you know, 10 days of Dota, and then it's a little bit of a, it's like a month break, and then in October the minor main event starts, and that'll run in conjunction with the major, and that won't end until like November 19th. I don't know.
I also hope it will lead to qualifiers being a lot more televised, maybe, and bring more attention to qualifiers because that's not a major immediately during the qualifiers, for example.
So right. Don't
draw the viewers from that. I think that's a great idea because qualifiers can be hyped too. And
yeah, totally.
I think, I don't know about you, but just, for example, something like ESL Birmingham, which was a major, it didn't feel the same for me as, for example, the Boston major or something. It just didn't have the same impact for me because there were so many majors, but now it's going to be five, so I think it will kind of bring back a lot more hype around the majors because of that and because the minor is basically only there to hype up the major because the storyline of the teams will be they're going to earn a spot at the major.
Yeah, also, totally.
Something important is minors will now require 8 teams instead of 16, which I think it's a great idea. For example, ESL 1 Hamburg and ESL 1 Birmingham both were major events but didn't have 16 teams, which led to, for example, Optic winning 3 best of 3s in the playoffs and being guaranteed top 4 and being able to bypass a lot of top tier teams. So it's more teams. You'll have to play more Dota to actually win a major.
Yeah. And I know that I've brought this up in previous podcasts, but like I just think that this makes pro Dota easier to follow, like as a fan. So I'm all for that. I think like from some of the response I saw from pros on Twitter was like overwhelmingly in favor of these changes, which I think is pretty rare that like the pro scene reacts favorably to Valve. Like I think there's usually a lot of conflict there, so I take that as a very good sign.
Yeah, I think it's just Valve moving from a more free market to whatever you want approach to their system to kind of regulating a bit more because a lot of stuff happened that maybe wasn't optimal.
Right. And there were also some change. They also changed a bit about like how the DPC points are doled out, which I don't really want to get too much into the nitty gritty of because it's a little complicated. It's probably easier just to read their statement. Yeah.
Basically, it's teams earn points, not players, and So points are not bound to players, but to teams. And if you roster swap one player, you lose 20% of your points.
Yeah.
And you can't play with too many stand-ins. And also team ownership. I think this is the last point.
Oh, this is important. Yeah, I like this. Yeah. Thank you for bringing it.
So it reads, Valve will only allow for one team under an owner organization to compete in the international. So it, if we look at the current direct invites even, it's Vichy Gaming and VGJ Thunder, who are a sub-team of Vichy Gaming, basically, are both direct invited, directly invited. So this would mean that this would not be allowed to happen.
Correct. Yep.
I think it's great for having it's cool because there will be no conflict of interest anymore, but I still have a bad feeling in my stomach because of this, because like, what reasoning is there in denying VGJ Thunder to compete in TI just because some conflicts of interest may come up? I think it's kind of unfair to some players just because you're competing in a sub team that you are now getting denied from, even not even being directly invited to play. You just can't compete, even if you like go through the qualifiers or something.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that they have, you know, about a year to get their ownership figured out and, you know, get their entities separate. I think it is important that different teams not have, it just seems like a potential area of abuse. Not saying that, you know, they have done anything illegal or anything like that, but, you know, that is a thing. Like,
yeah. And also think this conflict of interest, I think it never happened, actually, like, in this circuit. Because there was one conflict of interest with EG versus Optic, because if they let Optic through...
Mm-hmm.
They get an easier time if Optic get top 4. They potentially get an easier time at the open qualifiers.
Mm-hmm.
But that, like, the rule they implemented now wouldn't actually change that because they're obviously not owned by the same mother company.
Right. Yeah. I think it's just smart to, you know, for the scene going forward, to just try to remove as much of that as possible. Not saying that they have done anything wrong in the past, but just to... Just as a standard, it seems to make sense for me. But yeah, I don't know. Well, who knows? Maybe we're just talking about a dead game anyway. Because it looks like the compendium prize pool. What a
transition.
Yeah, looks like the compendium prize pool for this year's TI, not exactly blowing up.
Yeah, it's basically hovering just around where the last year's prize pool was. And I want to ask you, Sam, do you think this is because the compendium isn't as good as last year's, or do you think it has to do with just dwindling player numbers or something?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's a really great question. I'm looking at the tracker right now, and the tracker like compares, you know, where the prize pool is now versus where it was for TI-17.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think it does matter at least a little bit. It's got to matter what the compendium is, right? Like,
yeah.
Were you finding that, like, this year's collector's cash not as cool as other ones? Or what do you think?
That's true. So what I always do with my compendium is I buy the base compendium,
mm-hmm.
and then I buy all the collector's caches because you get a lot of levels through those. And
uh-huh.
then I've like spent $30 in total, and I think it's a great value. I know that a lot of people didn't like this collector's cache. I personally thought it was fine. And I think the prize pool is, we gotta face reality basically, because every game has a life cycle. We're approaching TI-10 and we can't double last year's prize pool every year. It's just not realistic. And I think Dota won't be a dead game for a long, long time, but I don't think Dota will grow anymore.
I think So I think it depends a lot on like how you measure success. I think in a lot of ways, Dota is still a very, very, very successful game.
Yeah, of course, no question.
Yeah. So maybe that's not like a very, I mean, that's like a pretty obvious thing to say. But yeah, go ahead.
Also, I think maybe it may be possible that next year the prize pool would actually be like $1 or $2 million lower. But I think what people sometimes like to forget is that even though not as many people play it anymore, the Dota 2 we have right now is an infinitely better game than the Dota 2 we had like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes, that's a great point.
That's the perk of having a game that's been there for a long time now. The game is very mature, although the servers still sometimes black out, but still, like, there are so many cool features and just in general cool stuff we didn't have a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for a game being, like you said, mature in its life cycle, and it seems, you know, stable. Like, even if fewer people are playing than a little while ago, like, the game is regularly updated and seems, in my opinion, I agree with you, to, you know, be improving almost every single patch. Yeah, so I think that matters. I don't know.
So Dota 2 is approaching, like, Dota 2. If Dota 2 was a person, it would be approaching, like, retirement. But it's still healthy. It's still active.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you're right. Like, it's an unreasonable expectation not only to think that the prize pool is going to increase exponentially every year, but it's also unrealistic to think that, oh, every year more and more people are going to play Dota. That's unsustainable.
Yep.
Especially for like how difficult a game Dota is. Like, yeah.
The barrier of entry is huge.
It's huge. I tried to have my friend play, and he was just like, dude, it's cool, but like, I don't know what's going on. I was like, I don't blame you, you know, like it takes a lot also, to learn it. So
I don't know if like, what do kids who are like, I'm not that old, but what do like 12-year-olds play?
I think Fortnite.
Nowadays, that may be it. Kids play Fortnite. So that's actually so true. I think young kids just play on their phones nowadays.
Maybe, I don't know. We'll have to have a 12-year-old on here.
maybe your cousin. So, wait, he's not actually 12, right?
So maybe a Lihu's kids, if they're listening. Right. We'll do a 12-year-old segment.
Oh my god.
Very good.
Very good.
Well, speaking of how Dota 2 is constantly updated, there was a little quick patch. Do you want to blow through that really fast?
Yeah, this is a... we're just going to do a quick patch rundown. We just took out the most interesting stuff we thought was like the most relevant. So I think this is a huge gyro nerf. His level 15 talent was changed from 3 flag cannon attacks to 0.5 second missile stun.
Yeah.
In my opinion, big nerfs. That was such an amazing talent. And now it's a slightly longer stun on an ability that like already stuns for a million years.
Yeah. Plus 3 flat cannon attacks is actually quite important.
Yep. So Huskar's level 25 talent got changed from 0% inner vitality cooldown to burning spears are pure and now deal pure damage and pure spell immunity. People are absolutely losing their mind over this, but I don't actually think it's such a great, like, I don't think it's an OP talent.
I think it's good, but it's sort of like, if you're getting to level 25 on Huskar, it's in one of two scenarios. One, it means that you snowballed so hard that you should win the game anyway. Mm-hmm. Or two, it means that the game is at like 60 minutes and everybody's at level 25. And in that case, you're probably still, you know, it'll help him. Obviously, it's better than zero vitality cooldown, but it's still pretty tough game for Huskar, I would think.
Yep. And also, like, if we assume it's an even game, at level 25, most people have a lot of HP, and Burning Spears aren't that good in general, even without BKBs, because in most scenarios, if people don't build heavily, like don't build for magic resistance at all, which most people don't do, it's just a 25% damage buff on the Burning Spears, which isn't that great.
Oh, 20, I mean, that's significant.
It's significant, but it's not like huge. I think it's like not as proportionally good as people make it out to be.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I don't really want more 2K Huskar players in my games, but looks like I'm going to get them.
So, yeah.
Oh, well.
Wisp got ever so slightly nerfed again in mostly all areas. I don't think it's enough for Wisp to not be a first ban in every series.
Yeah, very important hero in this past tournament from what I watched.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't important. Just pros agreed that it was so overpowered that you just have to first ban it and nobody can get it. VP got cocky at one point and didn't ban it against LGD, and they just got dumpstered.
They got dumpstered,
If VP can't win against Wisp, no one can win against Wisp.
Is what makes Wisp OP, is it the Ags tether, or what about the Ags
tether is insanely good. It's just it's basically a 4.2k gold swing, if you think about it in that sense.
Talent.
It's just a 4.2k gold instant talent. Also, the tether not breaking is nice for lanes.
Sure.
Not because you don't have to recast it, but the cooldown internally gets reset while you're tethered now, which means that you can tether to somebody, he can blink in, and then you can immediately tether again.
Ah, okay.
And also, previously, before Io got changed, you couldn't tether magic immune targets, and they removed that, which is a huge bonus.
Nice. Maybe we'll do Wisp for our Hero of the Week one of these days.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I think that would actually. I think you're a pretty good Wisp player, actually.
So oh my god, I played fun. One time. It was just one good game. One good turbo game with you.
It was a great game, though. I still remember that Jug game. Holy shit.
I think the Ags is really important for pros. Like, I watched that series that you're talking about with VP and what was it, LFY?
Yeah.
And
LGD.
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
No, I just said it was LGD.
LGD, I'm sorry. And something like you were saying, like, okay, yeah, like the Ags is like a 4.2k gold item, but it's almost worth more than that, because so for example, LGD, he would tether to the brew would split, so that's like getting Ags on your brewlings, so that counts, and then he'd tether to a secondary target, I think in that game was a Bloodseeker, so he would get, you know, multiple ruptures. It was just wild, like,
exactly.
And like you were saying, the cooldown gets reset pretty quickly now, so he was just bouncing around doing everything. So
it's just amazing. I still remember from our Jug game, because Ags on Jug is really, really good, but normally you just can't fit it in with your build.
Yeah.
And it's just so great. It's and yeah, as you said, you can just tether somebody really quick. He uses his ultimate, then you tether somebody else, then you tether somebody else, and boom, you have a 12k gold advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it takes some thinking, obviously, but it can be really good.
Because
especially with pros who are actually A, good at the game, and B, like, on the same page. So
they have to pull. They have the coordination to pull off three tethers in a team fight.
Right. Speaking of Jug, looks like he got a plus one armor buff.
Yeah, which means Two Flakes is going to win TI with the new EG, because they want to kick people again.
That's right.
The last change I want to talk about, because I heard nobody talking about it, but I actually think it's huge. I love Caudle, and his chakra magic now doesn't cost mana anymore.
So it was already free mana, but now it's truly free.
Yeah, it's actually free. And it's a buff to his laning phase, because a lot of times you wear it like 40 mana because you cast your W, and then you can't chakra again because it costs mana. So it's just a buff to his laning phase. Late game, it's not that significant, in my opinion.
No, like, yeah, you're right. Late game, it's not such like a big deal. But
50 mana more.
Yeah, but it does help in the beginning, too, because then you can more readily cast Chakra on your allies.
Yep, because you don't lose mana, so you don't have to cast it on yourself, like, once every five times.
Exactly. So, yeah. Get ready for more terrible Caudle lanes, Caudle Bristleback.
I just hope to see Caudle again at TI. Like, when Liquid was playing him a bunch at last TI, it was just so fun to watch.
Yeah. All right, we're heading towards... Do you want to do Hero of the Week, or do you want to go Noobs Ask Noobs?
We can do a quick Hero of the Week.
All right, let's do quick Hero of the Week. We are doing Queen of Pain. So this is your lady. I am not a quap player, so you will have to carry this segment.
Yeah. I wasn't a quap player for a long time, but recently I'm just loving the hero. Because when I go mid, I want to get level 6, kill my mid opponent, and then just run over all other lanes. Because I don't like laning, like staying mid for 15 minutes. And Queen of Pain is perfect for that. She's very hard to kill in lane because of her blink. Oh, wait. We should do this properly.
Here, I'll quickly do her abilities. All right. So her Q is, it's a dagger. It's called Shadow Strike. She throws this projectile. It hits you. It does some damage over time, and probably most importantly for the laning phase, it slows you. Mm-hmm. It slows your enemy, and it lasts for quite a long time. It lasts for 15 seconds. So really gives her a big advantage in the laning phase when she's mid with usually just a 1v1 matchup, especially against melee heroes. It's quite good.
As a melee hero, it's basically impossible to lane against Quap because she'll always just Shadow Strike you when you go for last hit.
Yeah, definitely. Her W is a blink. It's just a pretty standard teleportation ability. So pretty like very similar to like anti-mage.
It's a blink. Come on, guys.
Yeah, it's a blink. What was I going to say? The cooldown is the thing that decreases with levels. So that's good. And then her E is Scream of Pain. It does damage in a radius, and the damage scales up. It's just magical damage. And I don't know. Do you have anything really to say about that?
I mean, the thing that makes Scream of Pain great, because most, like, there's very few abilities in Dota that just damage, because it's either damage and stun or damage over time and slow and something like that. And Scream of Pain is just damage on a low cooldown, on a really low cooldown.
It's a 7-second cooldown. Mm-hmm. So it's quite good. Good for farming creep waves and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then her ultimate is Sonic Wave. It does pure damage. It's an AoE in front of Queen of Pain.
Yep. It's a cone shape, basically. It goes from a cone from the cast position.
Yeah, and it's pretty big. The travel radius is like 900, so it's it's pretty large. It does a good amount of damage because it's pure damage. So 320 up to 500, kind of standard, big old AoE nuke.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So yeah, basically what you're getting with Queen of Cain is a lot of damage with a lot of mobility, which is the perfect package for a mid hero. I just love
her. Yeah, so why don't you talk a little bit about how you lane her, like what makes her a pretty strong mid laner, that kind of stuff.
So what makes her a strong mid laner is her okay base damage, but she has a very good attack animation.
She's got a good projectile.
Yep, very nice projectile. Also, the thing that makes Shadow Strike good is not the damage, not the slow, it's the combination of it, because if you just spam Shadow Strike, you're doing it wrong. You have to spam it, and because of the initial slow, because like the slow is very big at the start and at the end it's almost nothing, it's very good in the first like 2 or 3 seconds, because it's a 50% slow, you can get 2 or 3 attacks in. And if you do this every time, just spam dagger, 2 or 3 attacks. It's a lot of damage, and it's almost impossible to lane against. Especially against melee heroes, there's basically nothing they can do. She's also very hard to gank because of her blink, and in the early game, people just don't have the lockdown to kill you in lane.
I think so. One thing, I was watching the Super Major, and I forget which series it was, but somebody was playing Quap, and the analysts were saying that she's very much a snowball hero. So I was wondering if you agree with that. Or
yeah, true. It's kind of like anti-mage. She's pretty squishy, and she doesn't scale on tankiness, because you buy Orcus first most of the time, which is amazing on her. Yeah, you buy Orchid first, and you don't really buy survivability items. So the thing that keeps you from not dying is just wrecking the enemy so hard that they don't have survivability anyway. Basically, you have as much HP as the enemy, but you deal so much more damage that it doesn't really matter that you don't have the HP. So if you don't snowball, and the enemies actually get items like Orchids and stuff, you just got wrecked. Because you have 1k HP and not very high armor.
Yeah.
And she's also great at snowballing because she makes use of items incredibly well. A Lincoln's is amazing of her because if she actually gets the spell block from a stun or something, it may create the time to blink away. Orchid is amazing against heroes like Anti-Mage for the escapes. And she is, like, late game, she's a pretty fierce right-clicker, because her talents are actually pretty good for right-clicking. She gets 25 damage, 40 attack speed, and both are very low-level talents.
Yep. Yeah. So you were saying that you like to pick a mid-hero that's kind of oriented towards ganking.
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit about that phase of the game?
The ganking phase, it's pretty easy. So what's like, Queen of Pain is one of the best heroes for rune control because of the blink and because she has easy lane shove. So what you do is at like 150 or something, you walk up to the lane, cast your E, attack a couple of times because then it's going to be shoved, so you're not missing creeps when you're going for the rune. Then you walk to the rune. If the enemy is contesting it, you can just blink and get it anyway. If not, you'll just walk. You'll have the time because the creeps are shoved out. And she scales very well with a bottle because, as I said, she doesn't have a lot of armor, so she gets harassed easily. And because most of the time when you're going on people, you blink under tower, which means she really requires the HP because you're going to get out at like 100 HP every time when you kill somebody. And late ganking, it's what I like to do is not go immediately when I'm level 6, because most of the time people underestimate the damage you can do at level 6, because Sonic Wave is 320 pure damage, so that's more than a 400 damage magic nuke,
right?
In combination with Screen of Pain, which will be level 3 when you're level 6, you'll have around 600 magic damage. So if you lane against Lina, for example, you spam dagger on her, she's at like 400 HP, so you harass her, basically you blink on her, kill her, then you want to be level 7, you wait for your next ult to come off cooldown, by that time you're going to be level 8, and the other lanes are going to be like level 5. They're not on the other, you're level 8 with an amazing ultimate and a lot of damage and a lot of mobility, and the enemy is level 5. They don't even have the ultimates. It's incredibly easy to just get a smoke or a TP and just kill the core, like the enemy core.
Yeah, makes sense. Any advice for folks wanting to try her out and don't know what build to go?
Don't build Octarine core, and don't even think about killing the cooldown reduction, because if you build and skill the talents for Queen of Pain to be a pure caster, you're just gonna lack damage. But if you're gonna build her for right click, you're still gonna have a shit ton of damage from your nukes and a good right click. So it's just better through experience to go for the right click. Don't even think about going like Octarine with the cooldown reduction and the spell life skill, because I actually think the AoE Shadow Strike is super underrated.
There you have it, folks.
Build off a right click. Go Orchid, it's very good on her against people like Anti-Mage or Lina. Especially against Anti-Mage. Quap just chips on Anti-Mage.
Well, there you go. That's what you do, folks. Then you win the Dota game.
I'll lose in my case.
I'm sure you're fine. All right, let's do a quick noobs ask noobs question here, and then we will end the show.
Okay.
So I think this is from Dora the Destroyer.
Yes.
Is there any argument to be made for leaving a known ward alive and playing around that vision so that their wards give a false sense of security?
What do you think?
I love this line of thinking. I like the mind games idea. However, I think for all intensive purposes in your pubs, this is not a good strategy.
Yes.
And it is not a good strategy for multiple reasons. The first reason is, even if you know that there is a ward there, and even if you tell very clearly your teammates that there is a ward there, they will forget because it's a pub, or they're not paying attention or whatever. So they are bound to play in a way that reveals their position. So that's one thing. And the second thing is that if you leave the ward up and you decide, okay, I'm gonna leave the ward up, I know it's there, but I'm gonna, you know, play this mind game, you know, sort of, I don't know if that means that you're avoiding that area or if you're moving into that area but being cautious. Either way, you're still giving the enemy team valuable information about your location.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not really great.
Yeah.
'Cause if you're not in the area of the ward, then they know that information. And if you are in that area, then, you know, obviously they know that too. So, I mean, maybe you could do like a next level play of like, you know, baiting. Like,
yeah, maybe you smoke up your team under it and one carry farms the camp under the ward or something.
Right. Like, but that requires like, obviously not like a pub. Like, it would be impossible to, you know, do in a pub. But I like that idea. It could be really cool. But overall, I think probably it's just very hard to execute in a pub environment.
I also wouldn't do it. Because let's say you do what I just said. You smoke up under the ward, like four teammates. You bait the enemy on going on one. You're going to get a team fight under the ward. And it's still fighting under a ward where the enemy has high ground vision and you potentially don't. Like, even if you bait the team to take a bad fight, it's not really... Like, if you bait the enemy team to take a bad fight under that ward because they went on the wrong target and the whole team popped out of smoke... It can't be that bad of a fight because you're still fighting under their vision.
Yeah, it would still be pretty tough. I think that's a good point. So it's probably just better to deward them, get that extra gold in your pocket, and it's kind of demoralizing as a support to constantly be dewarded. So I think there's a lot of benefits to dewarding.
Yep. All right.
Yeah.
Next one.
Let's see. Is this also from Dora the Explorer? The Destroyer?
Spirit Break. Yeah, so it's just change if Spirit Breaker's Greater Bash is based on Spirit Breaker's movement speed. And his question was if the damage gets increased if he gets searched by Darkseer, for example. I tested it. I found it pretty hard to test because the dummies in the test, like in the test thingy that Dota has, you can't force a bash proc, so you don't know how much damage to do. I ended up testing it with just ulting, and I can confirm that if you are searched, for example, you will do more damage with your greater bash.
Oh.
Easy.
There question. You go. Thanks for testing that one out. Very good. I actually did not know that greater bash dealt damage as a percent of movement speed. So
it's pretty neat.
There you go. Learn new things every day. Cool. Well, do we have anything else before we go?
I don't think so. I think we're good. We're gonna do, as we said, we're gonna do a super major episode, a separate super major episode with Two Flakes and Baby Buck Troy, because I think they actually watched some. I didn't.
So yeah. Yes, they watched a lot, and they are much better at Dota than we are, so they will give us their expert analysis. So yeah, come out Theme Thursday, happening every Thursday at 8:30 Eastern. I have not picked themes yet, but there will be themes, there will be games. So come on down, that's always a fun time. And we hope to see as many of you as possible in Philly, in real life.
Come to Philly, guys.
Come to Philly, everyone. It'll be cool. All right, Aaron, thanks so much for coming. It was fun. Yep.
See ya.
Bye-bye, everyone.